堂听 class.com。
Thank you, Henry。
谢谢。
老朋友，新朋友。
老朋友。
It is always a pleasure for me to return to China, to renew old friendships, and to forge new relationships. China is very special to me. I've had the privilege of visiting your country many, many times over the past 20 years. And I believe that you know how proud we are of our business here, the IBM China team led by my colleague, Henry Zhao. We employ about 2,000 people in IBM China. We've established 7 joint ventures with an additional 3,000 employees in areas including application software, software development, and manufacturing. We enjoy relationships with hundreds of local Chinese business partners, and we continue to invest very heavily in China. Our storage business is among IBM's most strategic and fastest growing, and China is home to developments and manufacturing facilities that feed our assembly plants all over the world. We spent about $200 million in the last 2 years in these facilities, including a joint venture in Shenzhen Leong Storage Products Company. In April, we opened the IBM China Mega Call Center to provide technical support for a full range of our products and services. It's the most advanced such call center in all of Asia. In the IBM China University Program, a collaboration with China State Education Commission has donated about $70 million in IBM equipment, training, and services to information technology training centers at more than 20 Chinese universities. Last fall, I was personally honored to host President Zhang during his trip to the United States, and at his request, we demonstrated some of IBM's latest technologies, including one we are extremely proud of, a speech recognition program for Mandarin, a fantastic product developed right here in our advanced research laboratory in Beijing. Yesterday, I had the pleasure of meeting with President Zhang once again. We shared a lot of positive ideas of how we can strengthen IBM's relationship with China and serve China's interest in the reformation of Chinese state-owned enterprises. IBM has enjoyed a relationship with China that has endured for more than half a century, but I do not believe that there has ever been a more exciting time to be doing business here, as vast new opportunities are created by your sweeping modernization, an ambitious government-led reform program of thousands of state-owned enterprises. This transformation, I believe, will underscore the critical importance of information technology as a driver of competitive success and real economic growth in China. So today, I want to talk to you about what I believe has to be the agenda of a leader of an enterprise, a business, government agency, university, hospital, bank, anywhere in the world, an agenda regarding this technology. And I will do that from the perspective that I brought to IBM. Some of you know that before I came to IBM, my background was a lot like yours. I was a customer of IBM, a skeptical and demanding customer of the computer industry. I arrived at IBM with a firmly held conviction that this technology is one of those transformational technologies that comes along about every 100 years and changes everything in our society. I wasn't alone in this opinion, But at that time, it wasn't so easy to find a lot of examples of entire industries being changed in the application of the information technology. Today, in almost every industry, in almost every part of the world, there are examples of enterprises applying this technology to seize competitive advantage and to create enormous challenges for their competitors. I think we're seeing information technology reach the point that all transformational technologies reach when they are no longer controlled by just a small group of skilled professionals. When they cross over to mass acceptance and ubiquity. Networking technology is still in its infancy, yet it has reached already the point where we can call it a new mass medium. Consider that in the U.S., radio took about 30 years to attract 50 million users. Television took 13 years. Cable television took 10 years. The internet did it in less than half of that. Less than 5 years after the birth of the World Wide Web, some 90 million people are online around the world. That number will be hundreds of millions before too long. Of course, right now, the U.S. has embraced the net more fully than other nations, both in terms of individual users and business use. But clearly this is a global medium. Very soon there will be an equal number of people accessing the web in English and other languages. Five countries other than the U.S. have around 10% of their population using the web. Here in China, the number of internet users has nearly doubled since just last October to more than 1 million users. And I've seen statistics that say your internet population will exceed 7 million people by the year 2001. Some people are talking about a phenomenon they call internet leapfrog. A high-stakes game in which countries and geographies that make the most astute use of networking technologies quickly bypassing other regions in production, productivity, and profitable growth. Today, this contest of internet leapfrogging is played on a wide open field. We hear about 90 million connected users, and some equate that with universal connectivity. But consider that if just 4% of the populations of your nation and India got connected tomorrow, the worldwide number of internet users would double. These numbers are interesting, but the real important question is, what are all these individuals and the world's leading institutions doing on the net? Not long ago, the prevailing view was that the net was about looking up information, or that it was a medium for interpersonal communication, a replacement for the telephone or the post office. Today, it is evident that the net represents a transformation far more profound than online chat groups or giving people access to sports scores and weather reports. It has emerged as a powerful means for parties of every type to conduct interactions of every type. Certainly, it's changing the way things are bought and sold. Electronic commerce is booming. Even the most conservative estimates say that it will be a $200 billion marketplace by the turn of the century, which is only 500 days away. most of that volume in business-to-business transactions. And while 86% of internet commerce was generated inside the U.S. last year, the rest of the world is getting into the game in a very serious way. Internet commerce generated outside the U.S. will represent more than 35% of the world total by the year 2002. But what's going on isn't just limited to commerce, to buying and selling. At IBM, we use a slightly more descriptive term. We talk about e-business to describe all of the vital transactions that will be conducted on the net. E-business includes transactions among employees inside an enterprise, among trading partners in a supply chain, and of course, the network transactions that transform the way educators teach students, physicians treat patients, and the way governments deliver services to citizens. All of these transactions will become digital. They won't necessarily replace the kind of physical transactions we know today, but they will augment them. Douyuan Electronic Group is using the net to strengthen the ties between all the suppliers, wholesalers, and retailers in its electronic manufacturing and distribution business. They're in the early stages of development, but they see networking technologies as the key to building production capability to compete with large enterprises. With the support of China Telecom, IBM is working with Hunan Post Telecom Administration to develop an online payment system. The first application will give customers the convenience of paying telephone bills over internet using the Bank of China's Great Wall credit card. In projects with customers around the world, we're learning that when they make the move to e-business, they follow a fairly predictable three-stage process. First, putting up information on a website, product catalogs, academic course listings, a list of phone numbers to call for more information. The second stage is enabling some form of interaction, typically for customer service, allowing a customer to track the status of an overnight package. For example, Yamato Transport in Japan and United Parcel Service in America are among companies doing this. And now, United Parcel Service is launching an entirely new business, going to the third and most important stage of electronic commerce. This stage is the one that represents the real transformation of the major payroll. It's when the enterprise takes the step to allow real net-based transactions. For UPS, they're offering secure, confidential delivery of documents over the net. The service is as reliable as putting the document in an envelope or package and handing it to a clerk or a route driver, and it's 20-50% cheaper. Think about what they are doing. They're essentially competing with their traditional package delivery service by creating an internet courier service. The UPS sees a digital future, one in which 30% of all such deliveries will take place online. And they're going there fast. This kind of decision-making is the real revolution in the network world. It's not just about technology, because when banks and schools and airlines and hospitals and governments use the net to allow people to execute transactions, they have to make fundamental changes to the way they currently do things. And as we all know, institutional change is hard. But more and more institutions are deciding to change because the incentives are powerful. Let me just list a few. First, networks alter the basic economics of industry. They slash the cost of transaction. Airlines around the world estimate that on average it costs about $8 US to process a ticket. The same transaction on the net costs only $1. Banks estimate that a face-to-face transaction with a teller in a branch office costs $1 or more. On the net, that same transaction can be completed for about 1 cent. 1/100th of the cost. Across most of Asia, the time-honored ways of trading stock remain in place. But that's beginning to change. Dashin Securities in Korea this summer took the plunge into secure online trading over the net. It is estimated that 5 million people worldwide now use the net to execute trades this way. One strictly online brokerage based in the U.S., E-Trade, has been in business for only 6 years. They already have $10 billion under management, and the only way they know their customer is over the internet. The leader in the field of electronic stock trading, Charles Schwab, trades more than $2 billion in securities every week on the net. Another incentive, very important to China. Networks dissolve barriers like time and distance that once limited market opportunities. This means that networks fundamentally alter the nature of competition. The network world levels the playing field, especially for smaller businesses, in a way that has never been true with prior generations of information technology. There's a little four-man brewery in a remote Scottish hamlet that is using the net to take orders from beer lovers all over the world. They're reaching a global market at nominal cost. There's a supermarket chain in Peru that estimates it costs $4 to $5 million US to open a new physical office. For an investment of only $100,000, they've created a virtual storefront that allows customers to shop online for thousands of items. Revenues are up, and with the net, they can advertise sales and specials without having to print up special material. One of my favorite examples is a little company called Lehigh Valley Safety Supply in Allentown, Pennsylvania, in the United States. They make work boots, industrial work boots that workers wear in factories. The territory that they sold their work boots has always been limited by how far they can drive a truck, because the only way they sold their boots was to sell them off the back of a truck that they would drive to the parking lots of industrial sites. IBM put them up on the web. They are now taking orders from Thailand and from workers on offshore oil rigs all over the world. They have become a global company overnight without creating a new subsidiary, hiring a bunch of lawyers, or setting up a new management system. And this isn't just about commercial transactions. At Monterey Tech, a university in Mexico, 70,000 students use the net to access 2,500 courses. At the MBA program in Athabasca University in Canada, they've gone a step further. There are virtually no students on campus, because there is no campus. All coursework is delivered over networks. The faculty is spread across Canada, the UK, and the United States. And they have captured 30% of the executive MBA market in Canada. Governments are using the net to build competitive advantage, improve services to citizens, and provide very tangible evidence of efficient use of tax monies. The government of Valencia in southern Spain is wiring entire villages, allowing citizens to do online transactions with local businesses, to schedule a school appointment, to get information from their kids' school. Shanghai and all the major Asian port cities are competing to gain advantage as centers of regional and international commerce. Singapore has just upped the ante in that battle. Singapore is putting 10,000 suppliers online. If you want to do business with Singapore, you're going to have to do it electronically. They're building applications that reduce cost and cut down cycle times. Very important when your competitive advantage is based on the ability to move ships and goods in and out of the port. So governments that in the past have competed for industrial investment or jobs based on traditional incentives like tax structures or access to skilled labor will compete in the future in very large measure on their electronic capability. The third thing that the net does is it redefines traditional models of distribution. Commerce. Financial firms, banks, insurance companies will have to ask, what does it mean to be a bank? Which is by definition an intermediary between buyers and sellers, or between people who have money and people who want money. What does it mean to be a university when it's possible to deliver the expertise of faculty to students without regard to the physical limitation of classrooms or a centralized campus? Next, and closely related to issues of distribution, are the implications around brand management in a network economy. This one cuts both ways. The net allows you to extend your brand, and it also creates new threats to your brand. Virtually any company with a website is positioned to challenge even the most entrenched brands anywhere in the world. And there's another dimension to the issue of brand management. This is the issue of online aggregation, a term that describes how certain companies are forming around the world that will pull together these aggregate products and services and sell them in an electronic marketplace. There are many examples of this today. In the UK, many grocery store chains are getting into financial services. In the US, you can apply for a mortgage on your house through American Airlines. The airline won't process the mortgage. They'll just take a finder's fee from their very best frequent flyer customers. It is going to be very important as you think about your global reach, whether your company and your customers see your brand or an aggregator's brand. So utilities, cable TV companies, phone companies, internet service providers, and one very large software company are all trying to position themselves as the aggregator between your customers and you. This creates major issues, not technology issues, but strategic issues. How do we protect and propagate our brand if that brand can be hidden behind the brand of a software company or an online service provider? If we're going to offer our product or services on these electronic channels, who do we partner with? Who controls the transaction and the customer information? The decisions, because control of the customer information means control of the customer relationship. I want to wrap up this discussion with a few questions that I encourage all senior executives to start asking. They're the questions we ask ourselves inside of IBM. First, do we talk about these issues? in our company, in our government unit, in our healthcare institute, in our university? Are they part of our important agenda? Do we talk about what our competitors are doing? Do we talk about how we're going to take advantage of this electronic world? And by the way, we know we can't assume that the competitors you have today will be the ones you have in the future, because, again, the net alters the whole structure of competition in industry. A major encyclopedia company in North America, watching the rise of the net create very inexpensive access to the entire world of learning, this encyclopedia chain just decided to lay off its entire sales force. Now, we can have a very meaningful and important discussion on this topic of job creation and job elimination, because, in fact, all of the great transformational technologies that have hit the world over the last hundreds of years, whether it was the electric light, the automobile, the advanced light, or now network technology, they all initially tend to destroy jobs, but then they tend to be a net creator of jobs. And it's a transition that all industrial societies face. The jobs that are created also tend to be higher paying jobs. This dynamic comes with huge implications for any nation, its system of education, and its ability to compete for these new jobs in a networked economy. China has hundreds of thousands of children to educate. What role can the net and distant learning play? The second question I urge all of you to think about is, at a minimum, are we experimenting? Are we getting our feet wet in the network world? You do not have to be a pioneer. You do not have to jump in and change your entire enterprise overnight. It is possible to be a watcher of the leader and a fast follower. But this technology is changing so fast that I believe the most practical strategy will include at least some preliminary investment in your business. You can't wait until every other institution or nation has moved to fully capitalize on this technology. So that includes getting started with e-business inside your own enterprise. At IBM, we've connected every single employee and increasingly an external network of partners, over 300,000 people, through an intranet site and powerful collaborative software called Lotus Notes. I'll say more about this in a moment. We are driving to establish leadership in our industry based on our ability to move ideas and insights around and through hierarchical organizations. You may have heard of this described as knowledge management or knowledge sharing. I have no doubt that in the 21st century, the most important skill for any institution will be its ability to turn information into insight and to get that insight to the people who need it. We will all still compete with the traditional tools of land, labor, and capital. But the biggest winners will be the enterprises that can best capture, use, and turn information into wisdom. The third question we all have to ask: are our systems ready for network world? When you put your business or your government on the net, you've opened a new front door of your business or agency or education institution. At any one point in time, you might find that there are millions of people at your new front door. So your web presence has to be able to handle that volume. and to do it while remaining open 7 days a week, 365 days a year, 24 hours a day. These are all issues we've had to work through at IBM as we've made decisions about our web business. And the subject of how IBM is transforming itself to become an e-business leads very naturally to the next part of my talk. My IBM China colleagues have told me that you are interested in some of the lessons that IBM has learned during the last several years of a major financial, competitive, and cultural transformation. Most recently, of course, our transformation is centered on our own program to embrace e-business. In fact, we've defined and declared a goal to be the world's leading example of what e-business is all about. So let me conclude with a few comments on the subject of IBM's transformation. I want to say first that I do this with a very deep sense of humility. I am not suggesting in any way that our experiences are applicable to any situation that you may be facing. I will outline the major elements of our transformation in the hope that maybe some small part might be instructive to you. Now, it is no secret that IBM went through as thorough a restructuring as any institution in the world over the past 5 years. And before I describe some of the actions we took, I want to make one very fundamental point. Institutional restructuring, successful restructuring, cannot happen without a commitment at the top of the organization to embark on an effort that will take 5 years minimum. You must have an institutional commitment to stay with the program over multiple years. You must understand that the heart in your industry, once you've answered those questions, how do you quantify what it will take to be the best? Benchmark that we said to every one of our managers, you must be equal or better than the best. No exception. The benchmarking process told us we had to take $8 billion out of our cost structure. We decided to get it over quickly as completed. We also benchmark quality, cycle time, and speed. Cycle time to us is the earliest indicator of success. In fact, the imperative for speed today in the world is greater than I've ever seen it in 30 years. You could almost argue today being first is better than being right. Not quite, but almost. So when any of our businesses report their monthly results, we also ask for reports of progress in the cycle time. It never ends. And it entails the restructuring of all of the core processes in the enterprise. So let me focus on the re-engineering, the specific processes of re-engineering IBM. Many companies will take on one or two major re-engineering projects at a time. Rather than approaching piecemeal, we attack the entire organization at once. At any given point in time, we had more than 60 company-wide re-engineering projects underway, and hundreds more among individual units and divisions. Because our re-engineering depended on global information systems, we discovered very quickly that we were going to have to completely re-engineer our internal information infrastructure, seeking to achieve common worldwide databases, common marketing systems, common financial systems, fulfillment systems, manufacturing systems, centralized data centers to avoid excessive cost and duplication. As a result of this re-engineering effort, we achieved our $8 billion in savings, and we lowered the cost of our information technology infrastructure by 27%. We've cut product development time from 4 years to an average of 16 months, and for some products, to as fast as 6 months. We've improved our online shipment rate from 70% to 95%. We've reduced inventory carrying costs by $220 million and inventory write-offs by $800 million. You've reduced material costs by close to $300 million and delivery costs by $270 million. And we've also seen our customer satisfaction indices rise. Of course, re-engineering isn't just a matter of cost savings. Our key objective is to move our business to the net. We're using the internet to sell our products and provide services and support to customers and business partners to buy goods and services. We're doing millions of dollars a day in business on the web, and we have customized extranet sites with our largest customers and business partners. Finally, all restructuring must address issues of cultural change. This is the aspect of our transformation that I probably spend the most time on right now. How do we get the most out of our most precious asset, 270,000 IBM men and women? We are working to build a culture of high performance based around a few fundamental concepts. First, an obsession with the marketplace, focusing our entire efforts on delighting customers and overwhelming competitors. Speed of execution, building a culture that encourages and rewards speed, flexibility, risk-taking, continuous learning and adaptation. Finally, a culture built on teamwork, one that puts the good of IBM ahead of any individual department, unit, or division. Let me touch on just a few of the actions we've taken in this area. First, training. As a company, we're investing $800 million every year in training and development of our employees. By the way, that's about $100 million more than we invested last year. Here in China, Henry's team has a total commitment to focusing on the skills of our people. So far this year, IBM China has conducted more than 7,000 student days in employee training. No matter what stage of transformation we are at, we understand that skills will always be critical to our ability to compete. Secondly, technology. Our information technology infrastructure supports our drive for speed, cycle time, as well as skill building. Our global intranet and our collaborative notes software is reaching out to all of our employees and to our customers and business partners. As I mentioned earlier, over 350,000 people on our own internal network. It is the largest undertaking of its kind anywhere in the world, and it's all done to support institutional change, improve our ability to share knowledge, and to break down hierarchy. For example, via our internet site, we teach thousands of IBMers about new solutions and sales programs without any of the traditional physical requirements or costs associated with this kind of training. Lotus Notes and the internet is also central to our communication strategy. I personally use our Lotus Notes structure to reach every employee simultaneously anytime I want on issues of strategic importance. These tools allow us to design virtual teams, manage them, get things done without having people always have to travel to meetings and lose productive time. Finally, measurements. They are fundamental to cultural change. People must be told what is expected and then rewarded based on the results they deliver. We have changed our compensation systems to make sure we differentiate our top people from our average people, individuals and teams, and we've linked employee compensation directly to company performance. Enough on IBM. Let me close with a personal comment about China. China is embarking on an extraordinary new stage of its economic and industrial development. The restructuring of the state-owned enterprise is as big a transformation as any country has ever, ever seen, let alone implemented. Process of transformation of the state-owned enterprise is well underway, as we discussed with Minister Chang and President Zhang yesterday. Today, it is working at the first stage of enterprise restructuring, which is to align industries, align assets, to merge companies, to create an industry infrastructure that is organizationally capable of becoming a globally successful enterprise or globally successful industry. However, there's another phase to economic reform in state-owned enterprises that goes beyond structure, that goes beyond merging, that goes beyond aligning. It's about the processes by which the enterprise are managed. It goes to the kind of things I just talked about that we've been through at IBM. Building the systems of cost control, of accounting, of inventory management, of supply chain management, of cash management, of customer relationships, of benchmarking. These are all systems that aren't created through structural change. They're created through process and cultural change. And underpinning all of those systems, what drives the creation of those systems, is information technology. Information technology is the science, the underlying science of institutional restructuring. It is the science that you use to restructure institutions. It is the basis, the tools by which you build systems that allow institutions to be efficient and globally competitive. China's information technology industry needs to evolve today along with the state-owned enterprises to support the transformation of China enterprises. Today, China's information technology industry is principally a hardware-based industry. It is absolutely critical that China build a software and services industry along with its hardware industry if the transformation of the state-owned enterprises is going to take place. Because what we need in China is applications, not more computers. There are plenty of computers. We need the applications that run on the computers that will allow the state-owned enterprises to achieve this transformation. I'm not talking about simple, unsophisticated software like spreadsheets, word processing, games. I mean, that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about enterprise, large, complex software that allows companies to do all the things I talked about before: transaction processing, data management, billing, cash management, managing plant floors, e-business opportunities. China needs to build the industry that will adapt applications from abroad and build new applications out of the intellectual capital of the Chinese people. And then a services industry has to emerge that will help China's institutions apply these technologies to their state-owned enterprises. And finally, there is in my opinion, a very big opportunity for China to lead in the transformation of small and medium-sized enterprises, small and medium-sized state-owned enterprises. Because what will happen in the future is that applications, software applications that allow companies to become efficient, globally competitive, those applications will be embedded in a network. Small and medium-sized companies will not have to build those applications. They will not have to pay for those applications upfront. If China's telecom industry develops in the way we expect it will, and if focus is given to these Chinese applications, small and medium-sized businesses will be able to, in effect, rent the applications, dial up on their telephone, and have a billing application, an accounting application, and an e-business application to use without having to build it, pay up front, maintain it. But again, this requires a focus in China on the next stage of development of the information technology industry, which is the move beyond just making PCs and hardware to making intellectual capital, to making the real heart of an information technology system, which is the application, not the hardware. So it's interesting to see how China's extraordinarily important priority of restructuring the state-owned enterprise aligns very clearly and carefully with the next stage of development of the information technology industry in China, and aligns very clearly with the next phase of the information technology, which is e-business. And through the evolution of Chinese-based application, building on the e-business concept, there's a lot of opportunity and I think a lot of optimism about the success of the state-owned enterprise reformation. Thank you very much.